Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. I'm John Cook, and I'm joined today by George Goncalves, MUFG's head of U.S. macro strategy. It's Tuesday, April 26, 2022. Welcome back to the podcast, George.
Always good to be on.
Yeah, it's good to have you. And I think we've had maybe a couple week break, so plenty to catch up on. And just when you thought that Q1 was eventful, I mean, it felt like, you know, as we said on this podcast, you know, days were weeks and weeks, month and months, years. April has started off with plenty of fireworks. You know, rates continue to explore higher boundaries, you know, continue to be surprised, you know, the last couple of days, notwithstanding with the veracity of the sell-off. And as I mentioned, it has been a while since our last podcast. So why don't we open the episode with you kind of marking to market what has happened since early April, from your point of view and kind of the framework you look at markets?
Absolutely. No, as they say, there's never there's no rest for the weary, right? So it's been a tough market. And the thing that's been interesting all throughout this period is, you know, and I kind of highlighted this concept that, you know, we're seeing a little bit of a rally here towards the end of the month, but you know, it's not clear it's really a start of a new trend. Well, you know, we'll see. The jury's still out on that. But overall, you know, the month of April continued. You know, March kind of finished with a little bit of a rally. Then, you know, we were right back out to a sell-off mode. You know, we broke above that, you know, that 225, 240 corridor range, which I was, you know, highlighting for quite some time as like the two standard deviation on average for the secular downtrend that rates have been in for, you know, multiple decades. And once we broke above that, you know, and as I've been highlighting, there was really no support. I mean, and once we then got above 255, 260 on the 10-year cash treasuries, that also didn't held. And we just kind of, you know, entered into this period where there was really no support. And we started, you know, probing the outer boundaries of potentially getting close to 3%, which we nearly did, you know, almost hit 3% on the 10-year. I think it's close enough for government work. I would consider that we got close to 3%. You know, other sectors of the curve did. And you know that was, you know, all about one week ago trading. The majority of that move, what was different this time, it started to pick up a little bit from the general sell-off that we had in the beginning of the year, was that real rates started to go back up again. So you had a pretty big move in real rates, which drove the overall treasury rate towards the end of this, you know, latest sell-off, which is now taking a pause. There was some participation with break-evens also widening a little bit. You know, and some have been arguing that perhaps this is the, you know, the way the market is signaling to the Fed that they're not doing enough, that, you know, if, you know, inflation expectations really start to get unanchored, that would be more of a cause for concern. But, you know, I think that's a little bit, you know, a little bit too extreme to get to that point. I think, you know, the majority of this move can be attributed to primarily real rates, and, you know, real rates have a tendency to rise when, you know, the Fed is raising the cost of capital, you know, just raising overall short rates. And so, you know, this has been a repricing of real rates. It's got us pretty high. You know, it's a stone's throw away from, you know, breaking clearly above 3% for the 10-year. And, you know, roughly about 23, 25 basis points under the last high, which was hit in 2018 at the end of that hiking cycle, whereas now we're, you know, we're just really getting started. Over the course of that, you know, the month as well, we got, you know, even more Fed speakers coming out of the woodwork and, you know, all of them trying to out-hawk each other. And, you know, we've got the market now pricing in multiple 50 basis point hikes. So all of this in tandem, you know, led to this, you know, kind of, you know, overextended sell-off, in my opinion, to where we got to. Now, you know, we're in a consolidation mode. We have, you know, it's the week before the next Fed meeting, which we'll have more on that next week. But yeah, I think that, you know, this is, you know, just a pause to refresh. It's hard to make a real clear case that we're going to break one way or the other at this point.
Yeah, I think as you say, we're in consolidation period, and so like the future is, you know, the future is highly, you know, highly uncertain. You know, you went into, you know, in a little bit more detail, you went into some of these points in your most recent Macro to Markets Monthly. The title was The Defining Moment for Bonds and FCI Ahead. So yeah, I'll kind of back up for a second. You know, for those unfamiliar with the term, you know, FCI is Financial Conditions Index. So this is a catch-all metric for overall rates, credit, risk, market conditions, you know, throw stocks in there. You know, that's a little bit of a mouthful, but back to your piece, and this is something you highlighted in your outlook, you know, earlier this year, and I really thought it was a cohesive narrative that I think still, you know, still is very, very applicable. But you talk about the interplay between rates and developments and financial conditions and how that could really alter the path for rates and ultimately how high the Fed is able to take the level of the federal funds rate. Why don't you go through some of these points? You know, I know there's a lot there to unpack, but go through a little bit of this for our listeners' benefit.
100%. And so it's been one of our key, you know, tenets to our view, which is that what the Fed is trying to ultimately influence is financial conditions. And they have really, you know, two broad tools. And the reason why they're trying to influence financial conditions, as we, you know, outlined both in our 22 outlook late last year, but all throughout this year as well, is that it's the most direct way at getting towards the wealth effect, which would then have the ability to, you know, start to curtail and, you know, pull back aggregate demand and overall kind of consumer consumption. And then hopefully that would then, you know, rein in inflation. The Fed really doesn't have a silver bullet that can actually, you know, stop inflation in its tracks. And just in general, monetary policy doesn't work that way. So considering, you know, how financialized, you know, the U.S. economy has become and, you know, how much it benefited, you know, post, you know, the COVID stimulus as well as QEs, you know, the Fed has to really get to the heart of the matter, which is financial conditions got too loose. It led to, you know, some areas getting to even more bubble territories. Now they have to rein that in, and that would hopefully also impact inflation indirectly, but over time. And I, you know, that's been our view. And we've been linking our view of the medium-term outlook for rates based on that. It's predicated on them actually launching quantitative tightening, which we think at this point it's pretty well televised that they will next FOMC meeting. But you know, that requires them to actually put it in place. And so far, we don't have QT. All we did, we went from tapering to pricing in a lot of hikes, and the Fed just delivering 25 bips so far. They're on track to deliver 50 basis points more at the next upcoming meetings. But for us, the QT and them actually physically draining liquidity and forcing the portfolio rebalancing channel and also the repricing of assets on a relative basis, which is, you know, it really serves as one of the six channels that the Fed policy works through. You know, that's the asset side of the equation. Like if that, you know, worked in on a go forward basis, going in reverse, it should also work. And so when they're doing QE, they're easing conditions. And so when they're doing QT, quantitative tightening, they're, you know, taking out the liquidity from the system. That to us, I think, is a concept that still is not fully appreciated. It's hard to wrap your head around it. It's hard to communicate it. I mean, I just spent about a minute and a half going through what QT means for me and my framework. So I think it's one of the things that, you know, markets know it's out there. They won't really understand it until it gets up and running. And as that, you know, liquidity starts draining, it'll start to impact overall financial markets. But the markets obviously have seen this before already through the years of QE and then the first time they did QT in 2017 and 2019. And what we're going to find out is that the system has gotten very dependent on all this excess liquidity. And the banks themselves also have been benefiting from the excess reserves. Some of these reserves have spilled out because of regulatory issues back into the repo market through the RRP. But nonetheless, there's a lot of liquidity out there. The Fed has to mop it up. And we think that is a form of tightening, just as rate hikes are a form of tightening. And so if the market has already priced in nearly 10 or 11 hikes, and, you know, QT is now going to be delivered, it's in many ways that some of those hikes can be substituted by the QT effect as, you know, they're draining liquidity. And look, you know, I think, you know, this has been one of the key messages from the Fed over the last 10 years that, you know, monetary policy, you know, first and foremost, actually operates from the announcement effect and from, you get like, you know, 90% of the actual bang from policy comes from them actually discussing it and putting it in place. And that's true for also the rates discussion. So, you know, them turning very hawkish even before they actually started hiking and then starting the hiking cycle, like they've already guided the market to where it is. And the market's also kind of gone maybe a little bit ahead of it. And now it gives the Fed flexibility to actually fine tune it if need be. Yeah, but again, this is a very complex system with a lot of moving parts. And you can't just micromanage the US banking system this closely and that easily. And there's always unintended consequences that could arise from exposing fragilities in the system if financial conditions get too tight and something either breaks or some sort of repricing happens in risk markets. Yeah, at that point, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Fed reacts, but we haven't gotten there yet. And so this is kind of like this counterfactual world that we're living through. First, you got to put it in place, see how high the Fed can hike, see how markets react, and then that feedback loop will be what will dictate how far they ultimately go. And so that, that's in a nutshell why I think this is a defining moment for bonds. Bonds have gotten, again, as I was saying in the first part, close to 3%. We might go above it. I think we're going to have a hard time staying above 3%, especially further out the curve. It's possible if the Fed really wants to invert the curve and hike even more above neutral, they can do it, but then they're only ensuring an even greater downfall in the economy later on. Or they can take a more measured approach, front load as much as possible, put the QT in place, which was our original thesis. But now, we've upped our forecast as well because the Fed has been, soundly much more aggressive and hawkish. So that we think that there is scope to get towards 2% or so on the funds rate, but much more than that, it's going to be difficult because I think by then, we'll see signs of the economy slowing down as well as, financial markets will be repricing more significantly. At which point, I think that plus lower inflation over time will have the Fed, go on pause and potentially even have to unwind some of those hikes if they went too far.
Yeah, really, really compelling argument, George. I mean, hard to see. I think you're the clearest point there is if QE, inflated the price of both fixed income assets and or riskless assets and risky assets, then QT, would do the opposite. Really resonates with me. Be interesting to see. Stocks have held up pretty well, so far, the last few days notwithstanding. Very interesting to see how that plays out the latter half of the year. And for more, I would definitely encourage our listeners to check out the April issue of MUFG's Macro to Markets Monthly, again entitled The Defining Moment for Bonds and FCI Ahead. And if you aren't receiving George's strategy reports, please do feel free to get in contact with him directly. And George, great having you on the podcast as always. Thanks for updating us with your views.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back soon for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.